When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Today's show is brought to you by Audible. From beloved classics to the latest bestsellers, Audible offers emotionally rich, intimate spoken word listening for anyone seeking to be more productive, better informed, or thoughtfully entertained. Join Audible now for their special anniversary offer. For a limited time until September 26th, new members will get 2 free audiobooks with their 30-day free trial at audible.ca. Audible is also giving away a free gift from now until September 30th to celebrate their anniversary. Just go to audible.ca/freegift, F-R-E-E-G-I-F-T, and you get a free download of Canadianity, Tales from the True North, Strong and Freezing. This episode is also brought to you by FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. From quick and easy invoicing to automated expensing, FreshBooks makes accounting tasks easy and saves you a ton of time. On average, FreshBooks users save up to 192 hours a year. That's enough time to watch the whole Godfather trilogy 4 times over, I think. FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial for Oppo listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/oppo and enter OPPO in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/OPPO. From Canada Land, this is Oppo. I'm Justin Ling in Toronto, and I'm already set for this election to be over. Today in our rotating celebrity guest host chair is National Post columnist Chris Selly. Welcome to Oppo, Chris.
Thank you for having me here, Justin.
Are you already super duper digging this election?
It's just wonderful. It's just a contest of ideas, the likes of which we haven't seen for 4 years.
We are in the writ now, baby. The campaign is underway, and I am already tired. On today's show, we're going to break down the first leaders' debate, which went down with a Trudeau-shaped gap in it.
But we did finally get to see the matchup we've all been waiting for, the one-on-one showdown between Jagmeet Singh and Elizabeth May.
Ooh, the top card fight. Then, at the end, I'm going to try and convince Chris how badly we need a wealth tax until he finally reports me to the House Un-Canadian Activities Committee. All right, so as day one of election campaigns go, this probably couldn't have been more wacky. The 43rd federal election began in earnest on Wednesday with a news story from the Globe and Mail that the RCMP were in fact investigating the SNC-Lavalin affair. What's more, the RCMP interviewed Jody Wilson-Raybould. Surprise! So, obviously, not great news for the Trudeau Liberals, but the symbolism really conspired against them. On their very first day on the campaign trail, the Liberal media bus managed to crash into the left wing of the Trudeau campaign plane.
And in came the replacement plane, the branding a little less liberal, but this one at least could take off.
If this were a TV pilot, Aaron Sorkin would sue you for theft of intellectual property. It's just insane. What's more, this had happened to Trudeau's father on a campaign, what, 40 years ago? I guess whoever was driving the media bus took the slogan, choose forward, a little too literally.
Right now.
All right, Chris, let's break down how each of the leaders did. Tell me how Jagmeet Singh was on day one.
Well, Jagmeet Singh was full of promises in London, Ontario. He has for you, all of you, national pharmacare, public dental care, vision care, mental health care, 500,000 new affordable homes, 300,000 new clean energy jobs. And he also has a selection of villains for you who you can blame for not having this already. Lobbyists, corporate interests, money launderers. That was an interesting one. He's talking about real estate, I think.
We can build 500,000 new affordable homes across this country and tackle the housing crisis. We can do that, but only if we have the courage to take on money launderers and speculators that keep on driving the cost of housing.
I imagine that episode of The Simpsons where they all meet at Monty Burns's giant evil castle on the hill.
And we're having ribs.
It's the local GOP committee meeting, and it's just Count Chocula's there. Andrew Scheer started his campaign in Quebec, where the Conservatives are desperately hoping to pick up seats. He touted his working class bona fides, you know, claiming just how poor he really was as a kid, and tried to convince everyone that he's going to help them get ahead. Nope, whatever, it's fine, keep going.
It's coming down to who you trust to put more money in your pockets so that you can get ahead.
Andrew Scheer was kind of knocked on his back feet, given the sheer volume and tone of the Liberal Oppo research team. They've been pumping out videos alleging that he is sympathetic to anti-abortion activists, and there's a secret campaign at foot to, I don't know, throw us all into conservative re-education camps. Overall, though, Andrew Scheer had a pretty good week. Oh, also, he has a song. It's terrible.
It's not good. And they got like a professional songwriter
I
who
know.
Put his name on it. Justin Trudeau's maiden speech for the campaign was big about his economic record, and why not?
Poverty is way down, unemployment is at historic lows, and job creation is way up.
He said,
"We're just getting started."
Which is sort of an odd thing to say 4 years into a government. I mean, how long do federal governments usually last?
Mandates will continue until everyone is happy.
4 years and you're just getting started anyway. He told the crowd that the choice is between him and a return to the cuts and austerity of the Harper years, which isn't actually a thing if you look at government spending, but it doesn't need to be a thing.
I feel like this election will be choose forward, and the next election will be choose slightly to the right, and then choose slightly to the left, and then be like, choose, oh, then that's the spot. By like the fifth mandate, they'll figure it out.
It's the center left versus the center right, just in a pitched battle.
The leader who should have had probably the best week was Elizabeth May, still riding high on some pretty good poll numbers and rivaling the NDP for a third or fourth spot. But any campaign launch that Elizabeth May and the Green Party was hoping to have went wildly off the rails as allegations surfaced that their star candidate in Quebec, former NDP MP Pierre Nantel, was in fact a sovereigntist. The allegations came from Pierre Nantel, who kept saying that he was, in fact, a sovereigntist. Now, Liz May says that is not the case. Pierre Nantel believes in a united Canada. Those comments were quickly contrasted by Pierre Nantel, who kept repeating that he was, in fact, a sovereigntist.
It's one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen in Canadian politics. He keeps saying, I'm a sovereigntist. I'm a sovereigntist. She's like, book me on Power and Politics. I'm going to put this to bed tonight by saying that he's not.
No, no, no. He was saying, sovereigntist.
Still in Quebec, the Rhinoceros Party, haven't they always been around?
Oh, they've always been there.
Just... I feel like they went away and maybe they've come back. Anyways.
I think they're with renewed purpose now.
And what a purpose. They have engaged someone named Maxime Bernier to run against Maxime Bernier.
With my favorite slogan of all time, which is, not sure, vote for both.
I mean, this election deserves to have the piss taken out of it.
And
I'm so happy that the Rhinoceros Party is full of beans.
And as though it couldn't get any better, a massive spy scandal broke this week. The former right-hand man to ex-RCMP Commissioner Bob Paulson was arrested on a slew of espionage charges.
Cameron Ortiz was a director general with an intelligence unit in the RCMP, and sources say that he had access to the most highly classified information in the government.
Security experts tell us it could be the biggest breach of national security in Canadian history.
You can't get through an election campaign without some good espionage scandal. I just love it. I love it.
Yeah, the RCMP is just, they got their hands full with this election.
That's true. I also love that a bunch of stories had to explicitly mention that the arrest had nothing to do with SNC-Lavalin or Mark Norman, or like, this is just like a list of scandals. It did nothing to do with any of these.
Bullet points.
And finally, the in memoriam segment for all of the candidates who have been summarily taken out behind the woodshed and shot by their parties who don't want to have to deal with the bad day's news.
I will remember you.
It's day four, to be clear.
Will you remember me?
There was no casualties in the Liberal campaign, but the Conservatives lost Cameron Ogilvie in Winnipeg North, who proudly proclaimed his love for the white race. Can't say that.
You shouldn't even really think it, but you certainly can't say it.
The NDP lost Doc Curry in Kamloops-Thompson Caribou. Great name. Over online comments threatening various reporters covering energy projects out there. R.I.P. There's also Olivier Mathieu in LaSalle-Aimard-Verdun. He was alleged of domestic abuse.
Which that's not funny at all.
No, that's not funny at all. He probably should have been fired, and good job on that front.
Yeah.
The Greens lost Eric Schulman in Simcoe North over a social media post that he talked about serving pig meat to Muslims, which, yeah.
Not on message. Not on message, Eric.
Didn't see that coming from the Greens, but here we are. And my favorite firing of this week was from the People's Party. They ousted Brian Mizera in Coquitlam, Port Coquitlam.
After, great riding name.
It's such a great riding name. It's the riding so nice they named it twice. they fired him not over racism or threats to Muslims or any of that. No. He criticized Maxime Bernier for not doing enough to tackle racism within the party, which is apparently a cardinal sin in the People's Party, so there you go. The White People's Party of Canada will not allow anyone questioning a lack of racism in their ranks.
I believe they have quite a diverse slate of candidates, if I was listening to last week's Oppo.
That's true. That doesn't necessarily guarantee good policies, though. to their credit, the White People's Party of Canada insists that they fired him over some weird financial regulation issues. Elections Canada says, no, that's not why. So there you go. Pour one out for all of the fallen candidates thus far. Oppo has a new sponsor this week. CBC Absolutely Alberta and Backroad Productions present Digging in the Dirt, a documentary about the psychological costs of working in Alberta's oil sands and the mental health crisis that has been ignored for a decade. It's raw, compassionate, and heartbreaking, and more than that, it's really interesting. Digging in the Dirt does a really good job of laying out the oil field conditions through the eyes of the workers themselves. Oftentimes, the conversation is about industry and economics and the price of oil, and not about the mental well-being of those who are actually impacted and who work the fields every day. The film follows three workers, an underemployed crane operator, a recovering addict grieving his friend's suicide, and a supervisor training workers in mental health aid. The film really underscores the isolation and loneliness that is so endemic to this job, and how that nearly destroyed so many of these men's families. For a lot of these guys, it means grueling in the fields for hours upon hours, but facing a boys don't cry attitude that can be really devastating. The people in the film are talking about ways to change the industry that would put mental well-being above profit. There's also some really interesting expert research into men's mental health, and the film imagines what a lot of these changes would actually look like in the real world. It asks some really tough questions, like what does this culture of toughness do to these workers? Why is it that this overwhelmingly male workforce feels the need to mask their emotions? And most importantly, why is the suicide and divorce rates for these workers so high? The film is the product of Edmonton-based directors Dylan Reese-Howard and Omar Mualim. Digging in the Dirt is a visually striking documentary that will change your assumptions about the people in the pitch. Digging in the Dirt is now available on CBC Gem and the CBC Gem app. This episode is also brought to you by FreshBooks. As a freelancer, you've heard me say this 1,000 times, but you know what? It is so true. Day-to-day tasks can take up so much of your life and they can zap your productivity. More than just taking up hours, the more time I spend editing invoices and tracking down my expense receipts and bugging my clients to actually pay me on time, the less motivation I have to actually work. It just absolutely zaps my productivity. FreshBooks eliminates a lot of those menial tasks. There's no more sorting through my email archives to find that receipt or to find that email. I don't need to be, you know, screenshotting a lot of flight receipts and all this. Everything is managed through the app, and it just makes everything so much easier. I've said it before, but freelancers save up to 192 hours thanks to FreshBooks, and you can really feel it. That's 192 hours of productivity where you make more money. FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to Oppo listeners. All you have to do to get it is to go to FreshBooks.com/Oppo and enter OPPO in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/OPPO. The tumble in Toronto, the dust up in Yonge and Dundas Square. Chris, it was the first debate this week, and I am wildly overselling it.
And Justin Trudeau wasn't there.
Of course, you know, the leader of the three opposition parties showed up, notably not Maxime Bernier, showed up in Toronto to do the first English language debate of the campaign, and Justin Trudeau decided he would boycott it.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting sort of experiment, actually. Well, not an experiment. Experiments are
a
deliberate.
Failure.
A failure.
It's an interesting failure.
A constructive failure to give these three people a chance to sort of audition. And it was, you know, one thing that struck me was that, like, they all talk like regular human beings.
Really? Is that what your takeaway was?
That was one of them. Is that Justin Trudeau's so dramatic.
Oh yeah, compared to Justin Trudeau, they sound like
regular human beings. I mean, they're still politicians.
I mean, who do you think won? I think everyone points out that Justin Trudeau won for not being there, but I think a little too cute by half. In your mind, of the people who showed up, who won?
I thought Singh did very well. I would say May did very well if it weren't for some of the just bananas things going on around her. Pierre Tantel came up in the debate sort of
obliquely. It was sort of a reference to sovereignty.
But you just couldn't stop thinking about this, even as she's making these solid points. And when it comes down to you've got the NDP and the Greens sort of neck and neck. And I don't know. I mean, I say Singh did well, but on the other hand, I was struck by a moment like both Singh and May at various points were criticizing the others for being overly ambitious.
Yeah.
Singh went after May, said, you know, we can't leave workers behind when we're trying to fight climate change. And it's sort of obliquely kind of nodding, I think, to the LNG situation in BC. And then at another point, Jagmeet Singh's talking about pharmacare, and Elizabeth May says, well, we went to the parliamentary budget officer, and that cost $30 billion. That's too much. Where's the money coming from?
I don't see how, Jagmeet, I don't see how you found the money. Your budget, as Paul said, it doesn't reflect the kind of costs for universal free dental.
It was such an interesting dig to hear the Green Party tell the NDP that their plans are not
and
feasible.
And these people are both auditioning for, like, the idealist vote, right? The, like, screw all this incrementalism, take my money, and fix everything.
Yeah.
And here they are still trying to play to sort of the middle, and they're at, what, 10%? I just don't see the point of this.
I mean, that's not fair. They're at 16%.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I think you're right. I think it's an interesting contrast, though. I mean, I kind of expected them to sound too similar the whole debate, right? And you know, the real dust up there on either side of Andrew Scheer, and whenever they actually ended up interacting, they're always butting heads with each other. I have to say, Elizabeth May, I always find her the most compelling in any debate.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it afterwards. If you happen to be watching the CPAC stream of the scrums, you heard myself and some other reporters discussing this because the mics were hot and we didn't realize. But basically, Liz May could tell you that the Keebler elves are coming to deliver you healthcare, and you'd be like, I'm not sure I believe that, but you know what? I kind of like her for saying it. Like, she could be promising you the most ludicrous things, but the way in which she says it is actually just like, human, it feels like a real person speaking to you, and it feels earnest in a way the other leaders don't. Like, as much as I think Jagmeet Singh did well during the debate, he had 4 talking points he wanted to repeat, and he repeated them regardless of the question, to the point of, like, you know, insanity. Like, you know, you want the NDP, I think, to some degree, to at least respond to the attacks from the other parties, given how low they are and given how pummeled they've gotten. You want to hear them fight back, not just deliver a straight-to-camera sort of like Sorkin-esque monologue.
Well, and when May cornered him on climate change, said, look, your plan's better, but it's not good enough, that's when he uncorked this line about how, you know, the Greens aren't pro-choice enough and the Greens aren't pro-national unity enough.
We have a solid position, unlike the Greens, on a woman's right to choose. We have a solid position when it comes
down to
national unity. We have a belief that we can't...
You're talking me out of Singh doing well in this debate now, I think. It was just this pathetic little deflection.
It was.
On what is supposedly, if you listen to the Liberals, the Greens, and the NDP, we're talking about the future of humankind.
Yeah.
And everyone's futzing around except Elizabeth May.
Yeah.
Now, her plan is full of holes and is probably impossible. At least she's saying...
Yeah.
We need to get to 1.5, or at least she's committing. She says she has a plan to get to 1.5.
Yeah.
The others don't even, I mean, the Liberals don't even have a plan to get us to our existing targets.
No, absolutely. And I mean,
it's this fantasy land.
And it was surprising because, you know, I expected a little bit more ganging up on Andrew Scheer on that front. I actually kind of thought he skated off a little bit. Andrew Scheer's plan, at least on climate, is complete fallacy. Like, it makes less sense than the Green Party's in many respects. It is basically, we're going to scrap carbon pricing, but we're going to bring back carbon pricing in a different way that will look much different, and you'll all love it.
That's effective.
Yeah. and we're also going to fix the climate crisis with magic
technology.
You know, like
magic of technology.
it defies logic that he's actually trying to campaign as the most environmentally focused leader, which he keeps repeating. He keeps going, I have the most comprehensive plan ever tabled. I'm like, no, you have 80 pages of, like, you know, color photos that you printed off 800 copies of, which in and of itself. You know, it was kind of funny to watch Andrew Scheer get into this debate because he started by looking like he was going to coast along. Like, he was excited to be there, excited to get his chance to pitch to Canadians, and just spent the first 20 minutes getting absolutely pummeled by the other two, and then kind of reverted in on himself for most of the debate. It was not all there.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he did better in the debate, even despite being pummeled, than he often does in front of camera on television when he's being interviewed, when he just seems hopelessly flummoxed sometimes by things that he should have practiced 1,000 times. Like, he seemed pretty at ease up there. He seemed human. He seemed... Yeah.
The Tory spenders were happy with how he did because, in their view, it was a contrast against the radical socialists next to him. And he's the obvious logical choice, if not Trudeau. But I don't know. There's a couple parts where it's just like, at one point, he's going on saying that we have to give First Nations the ability to say yes to energy projects, and then just gets absolutely browbeat by Elizabeth May in such an effective way. She talks about First Nations holding projects hostage.
We cannot create a system in this country where one group of individuals, one Indigenous community, can hold hostage large projects that employ so many Indigenous Canadians.
He calls them communities instead of... She just absolutely rips him.
The language you are using is so inappropriate when talking about Indigenous Canadians. You are missing the fact that Section 35 of the Constitution, already as interpreted by the courts, goes almost all the way to what the United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples... Consulting is not, I will consult with you till you agree with what we've already decided to do. That's not consultation.
And like, that's what makes Liz May kind of awesome, is that she's just so on her toes. She knows what she's doing. I don't think Jugmeet has the killer instinct to go in there and know exactly what lines to pick up on, know exactly when to jump in, and she just totally does.
But and yet, like, the NDP are sort of ridiculous, in my view, in ways that are predictable.
Yeah, okay.
Like, Jugmeet Singh goes up there and doesn't just say that Via Rail should be buying Canadian train cars. He says they must be buying Bombardier train cars from Thunder Bay, which has forgotten how to build anything.
Canadian-made steel.
The workers who no longer have a job, many of them receive layoff notices because they couldn't continue to produce their...
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
amazing products in Bombardier and Thunder Bay. Now, at the same time, Canada spent $1 billion on a contract to buy, in our publicly owned train sector, to buy trains from a German company. And I've said that that's completely irresponsible.
It's like, you're stumping for Bombardier? this wreck of a company at this point that everyone hates? But then Elizabeth May wants SNC-Lavalin to be forced to build water facilities on First Nations as punishment. And Singh completely destroyed her on that.
It's the only part of the debate where you saw Jugmeet totally just like leave all the talking points out of his head and go, wait, that's crazy.
Advertising it was a bad idea, Ms. Fully against
you can just accept it was a bad idea.
Like, Liz May, like, you can almost hear the incredulity in Paul Wells' voice when he asks her. He kind of says, no, you floated this idea that maybe SNC-Lavalin, as penance for their crimes, for bribing Libyan officials, should be made, or their alleged crimes, should be made to repair drinking water infrastructure on First Nations Reserve. And it's just like, and then Liz May goes, yeah, that's my idea, let's do it.
I mean, she's nothing if not stubborn. I mean, yeah, look at this Nantel thing. She's dug in, and she's... Damn it, sovereignty is not the same as separatism, and I'm going to keep saying that for 6 weeks.
She's so stubborn. You know, I think all the things that make her really effective in debates and that will make her effective in the next debate when she starts poking at Trudeau are the same things that make her such a difficult leader because she's so unwilling to go.
And unpredictable.
Never. Yeah, and totally
unpredictable. You just never know what's going to come next.
You know, so Pierre Nantel goes on his shtick about being a sovereigntist. After the debate, Liz May, it seemed, didn't know that Pierre Nantel had actually made some of those comments. So we ask her, as she's being led away by debate organizers because her time is up, you know, she's talking about Bill 21. She says, we can't, step in and make a mess and give fire to sovereigntists. And someone goes, what about Pierre Nantel? And she goes, oh, well, no. Pierre Nantel's not a sovereigntist. And we go, And she says, no,
read not what he says.
Read his website. And we're like, well, read his words and the way he keeps saying I'm a sovereigntist. And the day after, she came out and sort of said, well, being a sovereigntist isn't the same as being a separatist.
Yeah, which is not something anyone who calls himself either thinks. And she had such an easy way to deal with this. Like, her party has basically, above everything else, above pharmacare, above everything else, is the climate crisis.
Yeah.
And even if you listen to the Liberals' rhetoric on climate change, the idea that Quebec separatism matters relative to that, it's ridiculous, especially in 2019 when separatism is just... And there's lots of... And the NDP is full of separatists, obviously.
Yeah.
That was the whole plan.
Was in that party for 8 years.
Until like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
and I mean, she could have just said, look, separatism is not even a live issue right now. We have one job, which is to fix the climate crisis, and we're happy to bring anyone in.
It's exactly how I feel about, you know, the pro-abortion candidates, about, you know, like, all these candidates, I think you have a lot of leeway to say, listen, they hold views that are not really in line with the party, but 98% of their other views are very much in line with our party, therefore they belong here. You know, we stan a climate activist who's also a sovereigntist because, you know, we are putting priorities first. And, you know, I think Liz May, it's kind of incumbent on her to say, if we were ever to foreign government, or ever to be in a coalition government, we would not make Pierre Nantel the intergovernmental affairs minister, which is, probably incumbent. I don't think she needs to fire him. I don't think Andrew Scheer needs to fire all of his pro-abortion candidates. Like,
well, I mean, how long ago was it? Was it just accepted wisdom that your personal views on issues of conscience like abortion is fine as long as you park them at the door? I mean, that was Liberal policy until, 2015?
Yeah.
I mean, now suddenly every other party has to toe that line just because Justin Trudeau drew it in the sand? I don't understand why they don't have the courage to just say... I mean, Elizabeth May has said some pretty out there things about abortion by Canadian standards in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, she said that she would never have one in a million years, and she's tried to talk people out of having them.
Yeah.
And so just own it.
And what's frustrating, too, is that now to listen to her, she's gotten so kind of like bombastic about it. Like, you know, I will never move an inch in any direction on this. She's just so, you know, over the top trying to compensate for the digs against her past statements that I think it's actually sort of kind of productive. Like, if she believes otherwise, I wouldn't mind her saying that, even if she's kind of saying, listen, I'm never going to legislate or I'm never going to restrict women's abortion rights, but here are my personal beliefs. I would find that interesting.
Yeah, well, and on the separatism thing, I mean, it's like something from 20 years ago. I mean, Quebec politics has moved way beyond.
Yeah, a lot of separatism parties versus, in Quebec don't list as a priority.
They, you know, François Legault has a majority that he won on a promise never to hold a referendum.
Yeah.
That's as explicit evidence as you can get that this isn't the way it works anymore.
Yeah.
That's not the dividing line. And every party is fishing for separatists in Quebec. The Liberals have a former PQ health minister who didn't just support Bill 21, he supported the values charter.
Yeah, this sort of witch hunt is starting to get to me.
Witch hunts.
But I also think it's incumbent on the parties to just convey that and just say, you know what, listen.
Yeah.
Yes, he's a fucking sovereigntist. I'm sorry if you don't like that, then don't vote for him. If you don't care, then vote for him. You know what? Our party will have some sovereigntists in it. Obviously, the Green Party is a federal party, and we will campaign for Quebec remaining in Canada if another referendum comes up. But just calm the fuck
down. And there's inevitably they end up looking hypocritical because there's certain candidates you can chuck over the side.
Yes.
And there's certain candidates that you can't because you can't afford to lose that riding. And so they'll make excuses for someone in an important riding.
Yeah, exactly.
And jettison people in unimportant ridings. And if they just could rediscover the idea that, I mean, they are supposedly Big Ten parties.
Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah. And you have to sign various sort of pledges before you can enter the tent.
I think it's insane.
It's ridiculous.
Okay, so who won the debate? Have I changed your mind yet?
I think you might have.
So
I don't think anyone won the debate.
I think May won, but it doesn't matter. You know, I think she often wins the debate, but ultimately, won't move the needle because people still kind of look at her as, Elizabeth May, who I like, who I would consider voting for, but probably won't.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, I don't know how many NDP green swing voters there are, really.
I mean, I think there's
quite a few.
Yeah, especially in the urban centers. And I think Jagmeet did a good job of actually, introducing himself to the 100 people who were watching.
Well, then there's that. Yeah, how many people were actually watching?
But what I thought was interesting, and then this is, I think, the real takeaway from the NDP strategy, is that they knew nobody was watching. What they wanted to do was force every newscaster who's going to run a clip from the debate the next day to pick a clip of him repeating the talking point.
Right.
Not pick the clip of him bickering with Liz May or Andrew Scheer, but to pick the clip of him saying, the NDP will introduce a Green New Deal for workers and, throw the rich into the ocean. And I think that, to that degree, it's smart. It's smart what he did in that debate.
Yep. No, that's a good point.
And Andrew Scheer was there.
He did good.
He was there.
Andrew Scheer is never the biggest presence in a room.
No.
I thought that he looked his best self, really, like the best he can really be, which is inoffensive inoffensive and calm and engaged.
Yeah.
And throw whatever you have at me. I'm just gonna sit here beatifically and respond.
I'm gonna get you head.
Yeah.
This episode is also brought to you by Audible. Audible is a daily service for everyone who wants to feel inspired, educated, and informed. Remember what it was like to be able to read a whole book in a week? Well, Audible lets you get back to that, even as the world gets a little bit crazy. It's a great way to stay on top of all that reading you've always wanted to get done, but it lets you do it while you're on a plane, or on the train, or in the rain, or running, or jogging, or trying to do paperwork, or whatever. Audible celebrates the art of voice performance and audio storytelling, supporting creative communities around the world. It is so much more than just an audiobook. It's an experience. I find I always want to sit and listen to a book when I'm flying somewhere. It makes the flight way more bearable. Now, I'm going to give you one of my recommendations, and it's one that I didn't even know was on here until I went to look for it, but they have Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, and it's narrated by James Franco. Like, what? I'm very excited to listen to this because Slaughterhouse-Five is one of my favorite books. It's sci-fi, but much different than you're expecting. Listening to James Franco, of all people, read through this book is going to be so immersive, and I'm so excited to actually sit and listen through it. If you want to listen to this or one of Kurt Vonnegut's other books or any of the sci-fi novels that they have in their pretty impressive selection, join Audible now for their special anniversary offer. Just between now and September 26th, new members will get 2 free audiobooks with their 30-day free trial at audible.ca. Audible is also giving away a free gift between now and September 30th. All you have to do to get it is go to audible.ca/freegift, and you get a free download of Canadianity, Tales from the True North Strong and Freezing. Just go to audible.ca/freegift. So, longtime listeners of the show will know that I strongly believe that in order to solve many issues directly facing the country, I believe it's incumbent on political parties to support strong policies supporting our right to eat the rich. Now, unfortunately, no party has gotten there quite yet. The NDP, however, has gotten the closest. Jagmeet Singh has announced that his party would support a 1% tax on families who have amassed more than $20 million in wealth.
To pay for some of our promises, we're ready to increase revenue. And to do that, we're asking the people at the very top to pay a little more. And so we put forward a super wealth tax, which is a tax on those who've got fortunes of over 20 million. The PBO has announced that would raise in the first year close to 6 billion, and eventually it could build up to about $10 billion.
It's a pretty bold policy that I actually was not totally expecting from the NDP, and frankly, I'm pretty cool with it. And now, Chris, I don't know, I was assuming that given you're a National Post columnist, you would be here to take me away to the re-education camps.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm in favor of eating the rich.
If
they were going full like Thomas Piketty, you know, talking about taxing billionaires out of existence, that would probably get my hackles up. And the parliamentary budget officer was very clear. I mean, the risk with these taxes is always that rich people just find a way around them.
Yes.
Which is not a reason not to do it, because what is wrong with a country that can't tax people? That's kind of not a great thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, 1%, I don't...
Oh, wow, okay. Won over the National Post columnist
is
crowd.
Is it bold? Really? If anything, I'm struck by the fact that from what I can see, it amounts to about 2% of government overall program spending.
Yeah, which is actually great. So just to go back for a second, the Parliamentary Budget Officer did a write-up and did an analysis of what this plan would actually mean, which is, by the way, fucking awesome. You know, this is the first election where the PBO is going to be costing out probably the entire platforms of these parties, meaning we're no longer going to have the loosey-goosey made-up numbers that used to be kind of the staples of parties' campaign documents in the past. So I fucking love this. The PBO estimated that the NDP proposal would pull in about $2 billion in revenue in the first year. So by 2020, $2 billion in revenue. By 2030, we're looking at about nearly $10 billion in revenue from this wealth tax. Like you say, the PBO underscores that there's a whole bunch of uncertainty here because we don't know who's going to flee the tax. But 2% of overall government spending, that's huge. A government hasn't found a new way to boost revenue by 2% or to cover 2% of its spending in some time.
I guess you're right, yeah. But that's why. I can't bring myself to be that upset about it, frankly. I don't intend to have $20 million of net worth at any point in my life.
Well, you're not dreaming big enough.
I'm hoping to win the lottery, but you'll note that lottery winnings are exempt from this,
true, yes.
Which I think is quite funny. Why exactly are we doing that?
Well, because regular people win lotteries, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone thinks they're going to win the lottery.
Regular people don't get rich.
Exactly. So I think this is actually super interesting. I think it's even interesting that you're not that offended by it, which totally blows apart the segment where I was hoping you were going to call me a crazy communist and there'd be a fun debate. But
well, it's just a difference. It's a difference of degree, not kind, right? I mean, We tax rich people more than we tax.
Yeah, I mean, this is the foundation of
poor people.
But as many people rightly point out, income is a very bad indicator of wealth, right? You know, it doesn't actually indicate wealth. This has been the failure of our progressive income tax going back, 70 years, is that people have been able to amass wealth in different ways through the fact that we only tax half of capital gains or through really clever, offshore tax regimes or this or that or aggressive tax avoidance. People have been able to sort of squirrel away huge amounts of cash that has sat there with virtually no tax on it.
Valuation optimization is the term that the PBO uses to describe how one arranges one's assets. I mean, I believe in low taxes, but then I also believe you look around this country and there are situations that cannot be allowed to continue. I mean, the state of the worst off First Nations we have is just completely untenable. Like if that was going on in cities, it would be impossible to ignore, and we would have to throw money at it. Not that throwing money at it solves the problem, but money helps. But you can't do it without that money.
Yeah, that's right.
And I mean, infrastructure. You know, there's all these things. I'm ideologically in favor of low taxes, but at the same time, if the country's falling apart, what else is there? I mean, we need more money to fix this.
In the debate, Andrew Scheer basically said, we need to make sure that we're providing the same level of services for First Nations as we are for non-First Nations communities, which sounds like a nice thing to say, but the actual gap in those two numbers is massive. Like that. So in those few words, Andrew Scheer recognized that we need billions, probably tens of billions of dollars in new infrastructure spending. And he also wants to balance the budget in 5 years. The simple reality is the conservatives' allergy to new revenue sources is going to absolutely destroy their credibility on these issues.
Yeah, the liberals too.
Yeah, for sure.
It wouldn't be that hard really to balance the budget. If you look at historic budget cutting exercises like the 90s, I mean, we're not...
But the pain that was felt in those cuts in the 90s was obvious. And you heard Andrew Scheer again in the debate say, we're not going to go about reducing the growth in social service and healthcare spending, which at that point, you've just closed every door in the fucking house.
No, absolutely. Conservatives sometimes fall back and say, well, so much of this money gets wasted. And, you know, there's no question there's waste in government. But again, how long do we put up with this? You know, here in Toronto, in a municipal sense, I've long abandoned fiscal conservatism long ago and became like, take my money, build transit.
Yeah.
Like, we can't go on like this.
The externalities of not spending are so much greater than the actual deficit costs. I mean, the fact that you can't get to work on time, the fact that you're spending an obscene amount on your TTC fare, the fact that your house is wildly unaffordable, all those are costs that flow from the government not spending money or spending money wisely or efficiently or enough.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think it's a conservative position. I mean, I don't even really call myself a conservative, but there's nothing conservative about just shoving a bunch of problems over into a pile and saying we will deal with those later, not when those problems are, you know, basic infrastructure, not when those problems are like clean drinking water, not when those problems are just a harrowing suicide crisis. These things demand money to be spent on them.
And weirdly, you know, you can sit and say that, you know, Liz May or Jagmeet Singh or whoever is talking in a fantasy realm by saying that we need to spend $100 billion here, there, and the other place on a Green New Deal. But in many ways, that is more realistic about the long term sustainability of this country than Andrew Scheer saying, no, I'm going to balance the budget and maintain service growth, and I'll pay for it by, I don't know, pulling out $200 million we're spending in the Asian Infrastructure Bank. Like, it, there's a lot more nonsense that goes into that, you know, Andrew Scheer's position or Justin Trudeau's position than the other ones. I mean, what would be nice is to hear Andrew Scheer go, okay, I'm going to keep service and healthcare growth as it is. I'm going to balance the budget in 5 years, and here's the revenue tool I've devised how to do it.
Right.
You know, like, there's a much more honesty that comes from that.
You know, you talk about honesty. I mean, to the extent this election is about climate change, I mean, that is just a pure fantasy land. The whole thing is just so, I mean, you read these climate plans and they're so vague. They're vague and just unbelievably ambitious at the same time.
What's bugged me so much about the NDP of the past, as well as the Liberals, as well as the Greens, is that often when pressed on how to pay for these things, they go, offshore tax havens, and there's, you know, sparkly lights behind them, and like it is a complete myth. Every government, from the Harper government to the Trudeau government, and many in the past, have talked a big game about offshore tax havens.
Well, they are still talking a big game about offshore tax havens.
I know, but the reality is, and you know, people get very mad when you point this out, but we just have not been able to recoup the amount of money that we've hoped to recoup from them. What's so nice about this wealth tax is that it's very, very targeted. People will point out that there will be probably capital flight if this comes in. And Jagmeet Singh actually very pointedly responded to that and kind of said, listen, our country's pretty good. If you want to leave, you can go. There's a really good chance that Gavin Weston is not going to be like, well, there's a wealth tax, goodbye. Like, I'm going to keep my, you know, Canadian franchisee grocery stores, but going to fuck off to Barbados.
Like, you mean Galen Weston?
Yeah, Galen Weston. Who is it? Gavin Weston?
Gavin.
I don't know.
Galen's evil twin.
Yeah. I mean, sure, some will leave.
Yeah.
And some will try to avoid it. And there's very clever ways in which you can make sure that they don't skirt around it. That's what the CRA's job is. And I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that we can actually, you know, raise this $10 billion that the PBO thinks is possible.
Well, I agree. It's nice to have a tangible revenue source there, a tangible, plausible revenue source. I guess when I look at it, if I'm the NDP, I almost just wonder, why not 2%?
Yeah. Like, that's like Warren's plan.
You're stuck in third place. Why not go bigger? That's what I don't quite understand is this urge that even the Liberals and the Greens and the NDP and the Greens, and you saw it in the debate, have this sort of centrist urge at times. Like, whoa, 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 whoa.
We want a wealth tax.
PharmaCare, really? Or okay, future of the planet, yes. But, I mean, steelworkers, Elizabeth. Like, let's be realistic here. And I don't know. Hell, I'd vote. I mean, I wouldn't vote for any of the major parties in this election, certainly.
You are a card-carrying communist, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, if Jagmeet Singh came out and said, like, 2%, 3%, I could almost be like, well, hey.
Maybe that'll be the National Post editorial this week. Jagmeet Singh's wealth tax, not big enough.
Yeah. Well, I'm not on the editorial board anymore.
No,
I mean, I agree with you. It's a thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to just a fantasy.
And I like that the door's open now.
And I mean, I don't know how the Liberals would argue against it.
We're gonna see. Yeah.
Because what do you have? You have the exact same priorities, basically, and you don't have a plan to pay for them, except to borrow.
Yeah.
Which is not great.
No.
Why borrow when you can soak the rich?
I'd like that to be a bumper sticker.
I don't so much support it as I just think, well, I enjoy seeing political parties put together internally coherent arguments.
That's a very good way of phrasing it.
On the other side of that coin, you have the climate change plans, which are just a whole mess of fantasy and fiction. So, but yeah, it's nice to see.
longtime listeners of the show will know we have a segment called "Where the Fuck Is the NDP?" I think I may have finally found an answer. They're here. We found them.
Yeah, I always thought that they would do better than this kind of rock bottom that they've hit.
I think that's right. I think you're going to see a rebound for the NDP in this campaign. Whether it'll be enough to be 20 seats versus 60 versus, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I don't think they're going to get reduced to zero.
I would be very surprised if that happened. I just think that unfortunately for them, that they have kind of their natural level. Jack Layton took them on a trip, and then they just kind of started sinking back down to the level they were at.
I think the more they steal campaign planks from Elizabeth Warren, the better off they're going to be. All right, well, Chris, say it with me. Eat the rich. Okay, fine. That's Oppo for this week. Get in touch at oppo@canadalandshow.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at OppoCast to let us know what you think. We're weekly now if you haven't gotten the memo yet, so we will see you next Tuesday. This episode of Oppo was produced by Laura Howells. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton from Canada Land Media, and the theme music was by Nathan Burley.
And I have the last word this week, it seems, and that word is billionaires.
Eat them.
Ask them to contribute a little more.
And then eat them.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.